Good morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra is Lamed Hey. We start today on Lamed Amud Beis. Today is one of the most basic dafim regarding conflict resolution and how to deal with machlokas. You heard a lot of this daf going all the way back to the beginning of Baba Metzia. Daf Beis Amud Aleph. There's the Tosfos over there, which is again very popular in the yeshivas, and a lot of that is going to be based on what we're going to be learning this morning. We start in the Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph Beis, and we are three lines from the bottom. Zel Mershal Avosa Vezel Amershal Avosai. So we have a simple dispute between two people, and each one of them is making a claim that belonged to my father. But that's it. As opposed to all the previous cases we discussed in this parak, where each one of them marched out Edom and witnesses, and some witnesses testified about occupation, some witnesses testified that it actually belonged to their father, and there was a lot more information over here. It's really simple. It's claim against claim, and that's it. And there's nothing more to go with right now. And the Rashman points out over here that this debate that's taking place between these two people, it could be going on property, it could be going on movables. It doesn't really matter in this regard. The Rashman writes, Bein Besfina, Bein Mikar, we could be talking about a boat, we could be talking about property, and the reason why the Rashman said a boat is because we just got finished with yesterday's daf talking about the conflict of two people over a single boat. So it could be a boat, could be property, but neither has, no one's got any greater proof than the other person. So they're coming in basically with an equal claim, and let's even say with an equal amount of proof. So what do we do now? What does Beis Din do? So I'm Rav Nachman, so the Gemara says famously, and if it's not famous, we'll make it famous right now. Kol Dalam Gavar, Rav Nachman says, okay, let the best man win. So Kol Dalam Gavar, if you remember yesterday, Gemara mentioned this in yesterday's discussion, and the Rashbam said, Kol Dalam Gavar, I'm reading the previous Rashbam, just a couple lines up for where we are now, Bein Barais, Bein Bekawach, whether you have additional proof, whether you have additional strength, Kamosha Posik, Rav Nachman, Lafaninu, Kol Dalam Gavar, as Rav Nachman is about to tell us, which he just did, Kol Dalam Gavar. So the way the Rashbam presents Kol Dalam Gavar is basically, let the best man win. Although, that's not a perfect representation of what the Rashbam says, because the Rashbam says, Bein Barais Bein Bekoach, meaning that if you can marshal some more evidence, so that's great, so then bring in more evidence. And if you can't, so then Koach, meaning let the best man win. It is a very strange way to deal with conflict resolution. Basically, let them fight it out. But let's just first deal with it practically. Practically, what is Beis Din supposed to do at this point in time? Meaning we've arrived at an impasse. Meaning there's simply nobody has any more proof than the other person regarding this item. So just from a practical standpoint, you can't expect Beis Din to make a determination if each one is coming with this, an equal amount of proof that the item belongs to them. So that's just a practical standpoint. The Rush points out over here that also you can understand this from a psychological standpoint in that, yeah, in other words, you'll let the two of them fight it out, but the Rush says, who's going to fight for it more? So the Rush says, most probably the actual owner, the real owner. Meaning the imposter thought that he could, you know, scam and he can get away with a deal. But the real owner is going to fight for more. So, again, it's not absolute, obviously. We're talking about a very difficult form of conflict resolution. But under such circumstances, you will probably have the rightful owner being the victor of this dispute. Okay. Anyway, so what do we have right now? Our starting point for today's daf is the Psak of Rav Nachman, that in the case where they come into Beis Din, each one has a taina and it's equal taina. So Rav Nachman says, "Kol Dalam Gavar, let the best man win." So the Gemara says, well, let's compare that to another case where you have two people conflicting, and it comes down to the following dilemma. They both come in with documents saying that they were gifted land. Now, the Rashbam says, I can point to you in two times in today's daf where the Rashbam says that this is a gift. Okay. Why specifically does the Rashbam say it has to be a gift and not necessarily a mechira? I have my theories, but I'll just present it like the Rashbam. So each person now claims that they were gifted this property. And each one of them comes in with documentation. And the documentation of each person is dated on the same day. So it's one piece of land gifted to two different people, each one coming in with shtar, dated on the very same day. The Rashbam notes over here that even if we know who was in the morning, who was in the afternoon, it's not really going to make a difference. I'll read the Rashbam inside. It's the last Rashbam on the Amud. So Reuven wrote two shtaros on this one property. He wrote it, he gifted it over with documentation to Shimon, and he did the same to Levi. And they were both done on the same day. So now they have an equal claim to the land with documentation. The Rashbam says, and even if we know who came in the morning, who came in the evening, that's not going to help either one of their cases. In Yerushalayim, there was a minug of stamping the time on the document, but outside of Yerushalayim, it simply was not done. And Vikavan, I'm skipping now to the fifth line of the Rashbam. Vikavan shlo pir shlo Reuven l'shemon hashar nimtza shlo zicho biksav zeh ad ha'erev. Since everywhere else there's no time stamped on the document, so therefore, when does the document take effect? Takes effect at the end of that day. So now, literally, it's a stalemate because we have two people coming in with a dated document. It's the same date, and let's leave Yerushalayim out of the discussion. No time is placed into it, which means now that the transfer occurs at the end of the day. So now they're coming in with an equal right to the land based on each one of their documentation. Now what do you do? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what you do, as we turn now to the top of Lamed Hamad Aleph. So the Gemara says, Rav Amar Yechlokush, Malam Marshu Dedidine. So we have a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel in terms of what we're supposed to do. Rav says it's going to be divided. It's going to be divided, as the Rashbam explains, because it's a suffik. And we don't say, Amotz Mechaver Olav Araya, because they have an equal claim to the land. So Rav says it's going to be divided. Shmuel says Shuda Dedaine. Shuda Dedaine means the judges are going to make the decision in terms of who to award the land to. Meaning the judges will choose either Shimon or Levi. It's going to be one of those two. The judges will decide. On what basis will the judges decide? So interesting. The Rashbam writes Shuda Dedaine, the Rashbam Divra Masel. He writes, La'ososhie nota leva dayanim shaya nosin oavo okrovo yoser. Devan de lahu gamar va'akne lo yitnu asakarka. So what the judges now are going to have to do is basically make a good guess, an educated guess. Meaning, look at the two litigants, look at their relationship to the gifter, and basically say to themselves, well, who had a better relationship? Who was he more inclined to give it to? And based on that approximation, the judges are going to then determine which one of them to give it to. And the Rashbam continues here. It's very interesting. Next lines of the Rashbam. V'shema zacha balakarka b'shalo. And they may get it right. Meaning, obviously, we don't know. And they're both coming in, both with claims and with documentation. And the Dayana may have gotten it right. And the Rashbam continues. Avakishe ata amar yachloke bevade echa noto achetzi shaloke din. But you see, says the Rashbam, if we were to divide this land, so then for sure, Basin's going to get part of it wrong. Just an interesting game theory problem. Meaning, either Basin's going to get it all right, possibly, or I'll put it even more in the category of probably. Probably Basin will get it right, or they're for sure going to get half of it wrong. Okay, so it's a wonderful dilemma to ponder. But we don't have to ponder. Meaning Shmuel says, Shuda Dedaine. Let the Beis Din make that determination, and that's going to be the halacha over here. Just as another interesting aside, it's not an aside, but Tosfos right here on the daf says, Shuda Dedaine, near Le Rebbeinu Tam, just reading the first lines of Tosfos, third Tosfos on the Amud, near Le Rebbeinu Tam, Shemi Sheyirza Hadain Litain, Velo Kipesh Kuntras, Sheyamdu Datan Shal Notin. So Rebbeinu Tam says, It's not even a guess on the part of Beis Din. It's simply their discretion. Beis Din at this point in time has the ability, as per their discretion, to determine who to give it to, since we don't know who it belongs to. They're coming in with equal claims. Okay. All right. And there's obviously, go further and Tosfos to see why he favors the way he understands Shuda Dedaine rather than the Rashbam. And by the way, notably, Rabbeinu Tam quotes Rashi, which obviously we don't have on the daf itself. But again, another indication that there was some form of Rashi on Baba Basra on this section. Anyway, Okay, so where do we stand right now? We are trying to deal with conflict resolution and how to resolve. So we are at a crossroads. Meaning, in the case where the first case of Rav Nachman, where they're both just simply making claims to an item, and they don't have proof one over the other. So what did Rav Nachman say? Called Olam Gavar. So Basin excuses themselves and let them fight it out and let the best man win. And meanwhile, in a case that's very similar, where they come to Beis Din and they have documentation and it's equal because it's dated the same day, so let's just focus on Shmuel. So Shmuel says Shuda D'Dayne, which means that Beis Din does get involved and Beis Din will award it based on, according to the Rashbam, who they think is the rightful owner, or according to Rabbi Natam, whoever they want. But in other words, they're going to get involved and they're going to award it. So obviously we need to make a distinction between these two cases, because Beis Din's mandate in both are obviously different. The Gemara says, how some? Leika lamekam Allah demilsa, hacha ika lamekam Allah demilsa. So the Gemara says the difference goes like this. In the case of the Beis Taros, I'm just going to go in the order of the Rashbam. In the case of the Beis Taros, so it is indeterminate. Meaning, what do we have over here? Two people, each making claims to a land, each with a document in their hand, and their documents are dated the same date. And, you know, and let's assume the documents are perfectly, each one is perfectly valid. Where do we go from here? The answer is we're going to be in this indeterminate state. It is indeterminate, meaning there is no more information that we have other than what was presented to us. And at that point in time, Beis Din is going to have to take over from here going forward, because no new information, presumably, is going to come about. I'm skipping a little bit in the Rashbam of Hasam. It's about another eight lines down. First line of the Rashbam is Hakasav Ishtar Hilkach. Just reading part of the Rashbam. Rav Amar Chokin Shmuel Amar Shuda D'Dayni Dohovein Levar LaOlam. Since now, from this point going forward, we have no more clarification. They're both coming in with documents, and they're both equal. Now we basically say to Beis Din, you're given all the information you're probably going to get, and there's no new information. So Beis Din, take it from here. And according to Shmuel, Shuda D'Dayne. Now Beis Din will make that discretionary choice of who to give the land to. Avahacha, but over here, meaning in the case of Rav Nachman, where you have two people who are making claims over the land, and right now it's just he said, he said. So now, what could happen? The answer is a lot. And the Rashbam writes, Avahacha by karka deleka lo shtar velo edim. Over here in the case of land, right now there's no document, there's no witnesses. And what can happen now in the future is the witnesses can come forward. And a lot can happen. And so therefore, in the case of Rav Nachman, where it's just claim against claim, he said, so, and there's more information probably coming up on the horizon, Beis Din, you should do nothing at this point in time. You shouldn't get involved. Why? Because we can easily forecast that more information is coming up ahead. And if they rule at this point in time, well, when new information comes around later on, Beis Din is now going to have to reverse. And we just spoke about a couple days ago in the Daf how it is very uncomfortable and awkward. And according to some opinions, Beis Din is not to overturn a ruling. So over here, if we let Beis Din have a go at it over here, knowing that there's more information coming up, Beis Din's going to end up looking bad. So, right, the Rashbam writes, V'istur is a din shadana Beis Din. Hilkach ein Beis Din is kakan lahem ladun din shesofo lavo lidei ivus. It's eventually going to be, the judgment, if they were to give it now, would be a corrupted judgment, meaning based on the future information that comes up ahead. So, Ela manichno sovichod alam gavar, achivo edin v'yivar adavar. So right now, Beis Din's going to excuse themselves from the case, basically say, okay, we have nothing to work with, and there's probably more information coming up ahead, so right now, you guys work it out, and let the best man win. Fine. So right now we have two cases side by side, but the Gemara made a very important distinction between the two cases. In the case of Taina versus Taina, so Kol Dalam Gavar, Basin recuses himself. And as we just got done explaining, because there's probably more information coming up ahead. As opposed to the case of the Shtei Shtaros, where there are two documents, each one is providing now actual information, actual documentation. It's just that their documentation is equal. So then Basin does get involved. And what does Basin do? According to Shmuel, which is the Halacha, shoot at the Dinah. So it will be based on discretion. Based on what? So as I pointed out, Rashbam and Tosfos have differing viewpoints in terms of what exactly that means, but Basin will get involved. Okay. Umayshna, continuing in the Gemara. Now there's a third conflict resolution to consider, and that is a Mishnah in Bamitzia. Mehadidnan, the Mishnah in Bamitzia tells us the following. Hamach lepar b'chamor v'yalda. Let's say we do a barter. And in Kinyanim, so Kinyanim can be done in many ways, but one way which we discussed back in Bamitzia, you could do a Kinyan, is through a simple barter, where we're going to exchange items, right, value for value. And in this case, we're exchanging a donkey for a pregnant cow. And the halacha is that, generally speaking, in order to make a Kinyan, you have to do Mashicha. But when we do a barter, so how does the Kinyan work? When one does the Mashicha on one animal, the other one automatically gets the other animal that's being bartered. So, if I were to, Alex, you'll have the cow, I'll take the, I have the donkey. So the moment you pull my donkey, I now have a Kinyan on your pregnant cow. Okay, and the case here in question is that sometime during the interim of our Kinyan, the cow gave birth, Mazel Tov. Now, if it gave birth before the Kinyan, so that fetus belongs to you. If it gave birth after the Kinyan, the fetus belongs to me. And because the cow doesn't have to be here for the Kinyan, because it's a barter, so we really don't know. We don't know when the cow gave birth. Similarly, if let's say we sell Shivcha Kananis, where, how is Shivcha Kananis sold? Like Karka, meaning with Kesef. She doesn't have to be here at the time of the sale. It happens to be that right now she's in labor, and she's about to give birth. And then we make a Kinyan on the Shivcha Kananis. So, she had the baby sometime during the Kinyan. Was it before or after? We don't know. And now, who does the baby belong to? Same question. And the Rashbam points out, by the way, the Gemara here, the Mishnah here is very specific about the cases, because we're looking for cases of Kinyanim where the item of Kinyan doesn't have to be here at the time of the Kinyan. And basically, I think we've exhausted the number of different possibilities. Either one, it's a barter, or two, it's the sale of Shivcha Kananis where she does not have to be here, because a Shivcha Kananis can be purchased with Kesef. Now, each one is vying for ownership of the fetus. So, and each one basically makes a claim that obviously is beneficial to them. I'll say that the cow gave birth. I forgot which one that was I. I was the owner of the donkey. I'll say the cow gave birth after the Kinyan. You'll say the cow gave birth before the Kinyan. Or if we are transacting Shivcha Kananis, same basic point. So what do we do now regarding the disputed item? Says the Mishnah, Yachloku. So you know what we're going to do with the disputed item? We're going to divide it. Now, just an obvious point, we're talking about either human life or an animal life. So divide over here does not mean physically divide, but it means divide its value. Right? Appraise, assess the value, and divide its value. But anyway, it's going to be divided. So now we have a third mechanism of conflict resolution, and obviously it differs from Kol Da'alim Gavar, and it differs from Shuta D'Dainei. So when do we apply the principle of Yachloku? So the Gemara says like this, Hasam over there, Lahai Isle Dror de Mamona, Ulehahu Isle Dror de Mamona. So over there, we're going to use the principle of Yachloku of division, because it's a case of Dror de Mamona. We'll explain what that means in just a moment. But Hacha, but over here, in the case of the Rav Nachman, where they're arguing over a property, over a boat, or whatever. In other words, then it's claim against claim. Hacha idamar lo damar, idamar lo damar. In the case of our first case of this morning, the dispute over the boat, the dispute over land, where it's just claim against claim, but each one's claim is, I own it. So it's either mine or it's yours. So we're not going to divide it because it's binary. It's one or the other. Can't be both. As opposed to the case of the cow that gave birth, or the Shivcha Kanaz that gave birth, so the Gemara puts this under the category of Drar de Mamona. What is Drar de Mamona? So there are, this morning I'll go over two opinions. One is the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, you can see the Rashbam on the Baam Alam and Ahmed Aleph, Divra Maskal Hasam. He explains as follows. Gabi Amachlif Parabecha Morla Tarvai Islay Drar de Mamona. So in the case of the Para and the case of the Shivcha Kananis is Drar de Mamona. Shapar v'Shivcha Shoshneim Haisa B'zeh Achar Zeh. Because look, we know that you were the owner and now I am the owner. So both of us had periods of ownership of the cow and the Shivcha Kananis. V'chol Echa v'Echa Ton Parati v'Shivcha Siyalde B'Yasi B'Rishusi. And each person is claiming, well, it gave birth while it was in my possession. Inami, and the Rashbam continues, and he writes, Bishas Chalip and Yalda. It's also possible that it gave birth during the Chalipin, the Ein Lavar Shomi Have Havlad, which makes it now nearly impossible. I mean, I added those words, but it makes it nearly impossible to determine, well, who does it actually belong to? Hilkach Yachloku, therefore, it's going to be divided. Meaning, the way the Rashbam describes Drar de Mamona, it's basically, look, each one of them has a real chance of ownership. And furthermore, says the Rashbam, it could be that the true owner of this baby that was just born is really in a state of total flux. We don't know. Vishuda the dinah like lamemer hachafilu shmol delo shayach lamemer alagabe matana lishnaim shiru beisin lami oev yosa delididei gamar makne. You see, previously when we talked about the two people coming in with a document, again, there it's unlikely that it belongs to both of them. It is much more likely that it belongs to one of them, and then Basin will make that discretion. As opposed to over here, in the case of the birth of the calf or the baby, we really don't know. And it's possible that the birth occurred sometime in the middle. So the Rashbam is basically telling us a drar de mamona where the halacha is yachlok, where the halacha is divided, is talking about a scenario where it's possible that it was owned by either one of them, and it's possible that it's even somewhere in the middle. Tosfos, on the top of the next amud, gives a working definition of Drar de Mamona. Tosfos writes on the very top of the next amud, Perush, Dedal ta'anasayhu me'acha, yesh shafek lebezdin. Beautiful definition of Drar de Mamona. Tosfos says, you know what the definition is of Drar de Mamona? Let's say Basin knows the circumstances, and Basin doesn't even have to hear their arguments. Basin already realizes we have a problem. Meaning the suffix is so inherent in the case that even without the claims, Basin's like, oh, that's a problem. Oh, I see that being a suffix. That is, Tosa says, the working definition of Drar de Mamona. Dahaimi nayo hava havladim nolad kodem shemacher o acher shemacher vechem ishor shenaga chesaparv nemtzel verbitzida below tanasem misupakim beizden echaya maise in kodem shenaga yalda o la acher shenaga. Right. Also, Tosfos quotes the Mishnah Baba Kama, the fourth parak, where there it's a similar set of circumstances where my animal gored your animal. There was a miscarriage. We don't know if the miscarriage occurred before or after the goring. It's the same basic idea. Meaning, even if before we explain to Basin, oh, you know what I think? You know what I think? Basin's like, wait one second. All they have to know is just the circumstances, and Basin will be like, that's a suffix. I could see both of them. So that's a working definition of what Drar de Mamona is. And under those circumstances, the halacha is Yachloku, it's going to be division. Where do we stand right now in the Gemara? Basically, we have, it's really, this daf is really the cornerstone of three methodologies of how to resolve conflict. One, the ruling of Rav Nachman in the beginning of this morning of Kol Dalam Gavar. Kol Dalam Gavar tells us that when each one comes in with a claim, equal, nobody has any proofs, any evidence, just claims, Basin recuses themselves. And as we concluded this morning, why should that be? So the Gemara said, it's based on the fact that there's probably more information that's coming up later. And if Basin were to say something now, Basin's going to be crossed by the new information that comes up later. Therefore, Basin does not get involved, and Kol Dalam Gavar, let the best man win. Okay. Then we saw the second method of conflict resolution, which is shuta d'dayne. When is that going to happen? So again, the Gemara said, based on the Rashi's explanation, it's going to be a scenario where they both are coming in with evidence, and the evidence is equal. And most likely, no new evidence is going to be brought in as a support for one over the other. And so basically, we have all of our information, and it's equal information. So what should Beis Din do? So again, according to Shmuel's halacha, according to Shmuel's opinion, which is the halacha, so Beis Din will make the call. Beis Din will get involved and make a discretionary call of who it belongs to, according to the Rashbam, based on who is most likely the recipient, or according to Rabbeinu Tam, just simply their discretion. And finally, the third method of a conflict resolution is yachloku, is a division. When are you going to be doing division? So the Gemara says, in the case of drar de mamona. What's the definition of drar de mamona? Where basically, in the case, the suffix is so inherent that even before we hear the claims of the litigants, we know that it's a suffix, it's a built-in suffix to the case, and under those circumstances, yachloku, the dispute of money is going to be divided. Okay, adkan. That takes us to, and really all I did is just laid out the basics, like just the basic outline, and then obviously there is much to discuss on all this. We're going to continue in the Gemara, Amri Nahardai, three lines down from the top of the Amud. Now, the Rashbam says that this statement of Nahardai is going back to the case of Kol Dalam Gavar. And the Nahardai issues the following ruling on Rav Nachman's ruling. So again, Rav Nachman says you have two people coming in, they're disputing. Each one claims that belongs to them. Neither of them are bringing evidence. And then what happens? You have a third party gets in. Now, other people refer to him as a nudnik, but okay, we can leave the names aside. So Amri Nahardai Imba Echad Min Hashuk V'Yechzik Bayin Motzino Samiyado. So let's say now the two people are arguing over an item, right? Each one claiming belongs to them, and the third person comes and just simply takes it. So Nahardai says that if he's machzik, so you don't take it out of his hand. Why do you not take it out of his hand? The Rashbam writes, "Ein mosin oso bebeis din miyado sholzeh shlishi." You don't take it out of the third party's hands. Va'afagav dolotain midi, and even though he didn't make a claim, deshema gam lebeis rishonim ein lachelik ba. Remember, we're now talking about the Kol Da'alim case where no one has any evidence. All they have is just simply claims. We don't know if it belongs to either one of those two. So therefore, under those circumstances, so it really, at this point in time, Beis Din has recused themselves. It really right now belongs to nobody. And if a third party wants to come and take it, so not sure if the Gemara is advocating. In fact, I would even go so far as to say the Gemara is not advocating. But if he does it, so Beis Din's not going to extract it out of his hands. And the reason why I know the Gemara is not advocating is based on the upcoming Gemara we're about to see. Deni Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya teaches us the following. Gazlan Sharabim Lav Shmei Gazlan. That if you have somebody who steals from the public. Now right now we're going to use the word public in a very limited sense. Public just simply means more than one person. Here more specifically, two people. Meaning, if I take something, now the word gazlan obviously is a very strong word, and obviously it has its simple connotation of you're a bad person. But the point right now is that if it's gazlan shel rabim, if I take it from something where two people are disputing ownership of it, and neither has proof to owning it, so Rav Chiya says, Lashmei gazlan, you're not called a gazlan. Obviously, that statement has a built-in irony, right? You are a Goslin Sharabim, but you're not a Goslin. Okay. So what does that make you? Good person, bad person? So again, let's put the judgments aside, and let's just deal with what he's saying. What he's saying is that this is a support for Nahardai. Because no one has any ownership to it, and each person is just making claims to it, the first two people, so when the third person comes and takes it, he's not taking it from anybody, because nobody has right now rightful ownership over that, and so the Gemara is using the Braisa Rabbi Chiya to support the ruling of Nahardai. Rav Ashi Amar, back to the Gemara, Lolam Shmei Gazlan. Rav Ashi says, no, you misunderstood Rabbi Chiya. When the guy takes from an item that's disputed amongst two people, you can call him a gazlan. He is a gazlan in every sense of the word. Now, I know Rabbi Chiya says, Lash me gazlan, but let's understand what Rabbi Chiya meant. Rabbi Chiya didn't mean that it's okay to take it, and Rabbi Chiya did not mean that you get to keep it. All Rabbi Chiya meant was, lechumra, meaning not only you're the thief, but you're the worst kind of thief. Why? Because all of Shmegazan, or my law Shmegazan, when Rabbi Chia said you're not a Gazan, all he meant by that is shalonitan lehi shavon. All he meant by that is that you're a Gazan with no way of reparation. You see, under normal circumstances, when you steal something, so what do you do in order to make good on what you did? You return the item which you stole. Tshuva. Right? In the most literal sense, you return the item. Over here, you took something from somebody that you don't know who the rightful owner is, because the two people are disputing it. Now you took it, so A, you're a Gazlan, this is Rav Ashi's understanding of Rav Chia, A, you're a Gazlan, but what makes it even worse now is that normally a Gazlan can undo what they did by Heshif HaZegzela. Here, you can't do that. That's what Rabbi Chia meant. So obviously, with this understanding of Rabbi Chia, so now we don't have a support for Naradai. Meaning now, if a third party would take it, would he get to keep it? According to Rav Ashi, seemingly no. Of course, now the problem lies in the fact of who do you return it to now that you're no longer able to keep it. Well, that's exactly Rav Ashi's point. We don't know who you return it to. That makes it even more difficult. Okay. Fine. Two dots. Ches kasim shalshanim yom liyom. It's been some time since we started the Mishnah. The Mishnah was on Daf Chav Ches. We are now a week into the third parak of Baba Basra, and now after discussing and exploring many cases of Cheses Gimel Shanim and dealing a lot with basic conflict resolution, finally we turn our attention back to the Mishnah, and we are now going to address some of the continuation of the Mishnah. So the Gemara continues, Cheskas Shalshanim Yom Liyom. Am Rabbi Abba, Idalele Iyu Gufe Tzana Deperi La'alta Havi Chazaka. So, how do you acquire a piece of property through occupation? The answer is 3 years. And again, like we've said time and again now for the last week, it's more than 3 years, really. It's a taina. You need a reasonable explanation as to why you're the owner. Something as simple as, I bought it from you. Two, you need to be there for 3 years with Edom, meaning Edom need to identify that you need to testify that you've been there for 3 years. And three, no machal. There could be no challenge by the marakama, by the original owner, that you're not the rightful owner. So, that is what we learned back in the Mishnah. Rabbi Abba says the following, let's say that as you are on the land, the original owner helps you load the fruit into a basket. And you have witnesses that will testify to that. At that point in time, you now become the owner, and you don't need the 3 years of occupation. That is a siman barer. That is a clear sign that you're the owner. The Rashbam writes, "Idalele tzana deper la'alta vechazaka im yesh edim sheigbiyah ma'aret tzana deper mikarkazu al ktefav shel zeh hamachzik shiton lekuchi biyadi me'achashi siyeh lo loholech haperos lebeso shuv en yachol liton v'lomar lo mechartit lo machartit lo." The Rashbam says, once the original owner is on the field loading the fruit in your basket so you can take it home, Raya Brura. It's a clear proof. Now, you need witnesses that this happened, but once you have that, Raya Brura and La Alter, it's an immediate proof that you're the owner. Because remember, what should the Marakama be doing? He should be protesting your occupation of the land. Over here, this is the exact opposite of protesting. He's helping you pick up the fruit to take it home. Rashbam says it's basically tantamount to his admission that he did in fact sell it to you. Okay. Amar Razvid, the imtan v'amar leperos haratev neman. Now, Razvid makes the following statement based on what we just learned. Let's say the challenger says, "Yeah, I helped him load the fruit. You know why I helped him load the fruit? Very simple. Because I didn't sell him the property, I sold him the fruit." And if the challenger makes that claim, so then the assistance that the original owner is doing by loaning his basket is not going to be a proof that he sold the land. In fact, If anything, it'll just be a proof that he sold him the fruit. The Rashbam writes, Amar Zviti Ta'ina Ma'ar Basa Dadali Leil Lokech Tana Deper Leperis Horadativ Kidin Aris Lamechso Shishul Orvia V'chelko Hu Dadali Leil. Let's say the original owner says, no, that's not the buyer of the property. He's a sharecropper. What I was doing was just helping him load his percentage fruit onto the basket. So then, obviously, that is not an admission of sale. It's just I'm helping the sharecropper with his fruit. The Gemara, back to the Gemara, V'hani mil betoch shalosh. Now, this only works if it's within the first 3 years. Aval la'achr shalosh lo. But for the original owner to make that claim post 3 years, the original owner cannot make such a claim. Meaning, once 3 years comes and goes, so then the original owner can say nothing that will help his cause. If he wanted to retain ownership of the property, he needs to make a macha within the 3 years. So Rav Ashi says, it seems to be unfair. Meaning, let's say the sharecropper had a contract for that land. Let's say upward of 10 years. Now, what is the original owner supposed to do? When I say the original owner, I really mean the only owner. Meaning, if let's say he hired a sharecropper for 10 years, and the sharecropper is now going to be on that land for 10 years, so what is the owner supposed to do in order to retain ownership? Amar lei, but the answer is very obvious. And the Gemara spells it out. Ibai le limchuye. It is the owner's responsibility to lodge a formal challenge to his rightful ownership of that field. Meaning, if you know that somebody else is going to be working on land for the next 10 years, it becomes your responsibility to make sure that within the first 3 years, and then, you know, at intervals less than 3 years, you need to lodge a formal protest. The Gemara says, and I know it's the owner's responsibility. And Gemara says, I'll prove it to you. Because Hani Mashkanata Desura, you remember Bab Mitzi in the fifth parak, we discussed this at length, where we had a way of lending money, and instead of getting paid, you basically assume as a collateral, a person's property, and Mashkanata Desura, basically the business structure looks like this, where we contract that I'm going to assume your property for the next 10 years, not obviously take ownership of it, it's your property, but I'm going to assume rights to the property for the next 10 years. I will eat the fruit of those property for the next 10 years, and we'll call it even after that. Meaning, I'm lending you money now, and whatever fruit I take over the course of the next 10 years will be satisfaction of the loan. Now, the Rashbam over here points out, as we discussed at length in the fifth paragraph about Metzia, isn't there a ribbis concern? Isn't there a ribbis consideration? And the answer is no, there's not. That's the easiest way to say it. There's not. But why? Why is there no ribbis consideration? Because, as we learn, back in Bava Metzi, and the Rashbam over here writes, because this is not a cut and dry deal. Meaning, you don't know how much fruit is coming in. Meaning, it could be less, could be more. Meaning, that looks more like business and less like a loan. It could be that the amount of fruit that you're going to get over the next 10 years will be less than the loan amount. It could be greater than the loan amount. Ribbis is only when you know definitively that you're going to be receiving more than you lent out. Okay, anyway, it's not ribbis.
In this case, he's asking also the owner to work there for 10 years because he's working there.
Not necessarily. Oh, in the case of the...
Yes, the case started with him being in the land.
Okay. Years. Anyway, but the point goes like this.
I'm not saying anything.
All right. But the point goes like this. The Kasev and the Gemara goes over here, the actual language of the contract in the Mashkanasa Desura, the Kasev Behu, Bimishlam Shnaya, Alin, at the end of these years, however many years they contracted, Tepuk Ara Dabalo Kesef. So I'll get back my land and I won't owe you a penny. Meaning, you lent me money at the beginning, I'm giving you my land, not giving meaning transacting, but I'm letting you occupy my land, I'm letting you work my land, you'll take whatever produce is over these next 10 years, and then at the end, we're calling it even. So now, Mashkanasa Desura, a business structure that was done regularly in Sura. Now, so now let's say the lender says, you know what, I got this great idea, it's so simple. I'll take the contract, the Mashkon contract, and I'll hide it. And then 10 years down the road, you know what I'm going to say? My land. Why? Look how many years I've been here. Unchallenged. Now, the Gemara says, Hachi nami de mehemen? Do you really suspect that he's going to be believed under those circumstances? Metakne rabbana midi de'asbele de pseida? Meaning the Syrian contract. This was legislated. This was instituted by the Chachamim. It is a great way to lend money to people without means, and it was advocated. Now, the Gemara basically asks, you mean to tell me that the Chachamim are going to institute something that could lead to a very easy ruse done by the lender, which is take the contract, hide the contract, and now after 10 years say, hey, I'm the owner, I've been here on challenge for all these years. How come the lender can't do that? There's only one answer. And the Gemara says it. Because it becomes the owner of the land's responsibility, in this case the borrower, to say within the first 3 years, the land belongs to me. It's his responsibility to lodge a formal challenge within the first 3 years, and again, intervals from that point going forward of less than 3 years, so that he can rightfully claim that he's the owner of the property. Hachanami by Limchuye. So if by Mashkenasa Desura we have the responsibility of the original to lodge a complaint, same thing over here. If you are renting out your property, if you're sharecropping out your property, and you know that the sharecropper is going to be there for a long period of time, anything longer than 3 years, it becomes your responsibility to lodge a formal protest to make sure that the land does not stay in the hands of the sharecropper, where he can no longer claim that the land belongs to him because he's been here for 3 years unoccupied. I'm sorry, unchallenged.
He has a contract of 10 years. Why would he assume this from a complaint? He wrote a contract for 10 years. The land is going to be for the lender.
Wait, which case? The case of the sharecropper or the case of the collateral?
The collateral.
In the case of the
if he has a contract that he would give the fruit and everything for 10 years,
No.
Would he come and complain that he's blind?
If I didn't explain this well, I apologize. The case is where the lender lends money to a guy. The guy right now doesn't have any means to pay, but he does have property. So the lender says, good, I'll assume your land for the next 10 years, right? The lender is the one holding the contract. I'll assume the land for the next 10 years. I'll work the land for the next 10 years, and whatever yield I get will be satisfaction of the loan.
Okay.
Good. Now, at the end of 10 years, what should the lender do? Hide the contract.
Right. But it says that the owner, the one that got the money, has to complain during the first 3 years that the land is owned. It is.
Right.
Why would he come do that? Because he has a contract.
He doesn't have the contract. The lender is holding the contract. Right.
And he signed the contract to the lender.
Good. The lender is holding the contract.
He's going to use it. So why would?
No. The lender now is going to hide the contract. In other words, it's in the lender's interest right now.
The first 3 years after 10 years, he has to complain. No?
Correct. That's right. That's what the Gemara just said. It's in the interest of the lender. I mean, if the lender wants to be right and forthright and honest, so the lender's not going to do any of this. But if the lender wants to claim ownership of the land, what he's going to do very simply is hide the contract, and after 10 years say, hey, look, I've been here for the last 10 years. I have witnesses that I've been here for the last 10 years, and it's been unchallenged. I now the owner.
Why would the owner challenge it during the first 3 years?
The owner needs to challenge it so that the lender doesn't do that.
Establish the package.
You already agreed that I'm lending my land to the person for 10 years. Why would you in the first 3 years come and say it's mine?
Because if he doesn't do that, the lender now will have the ability. It's deceitful. It's dishonest. But the lender will have the ability to say, I've been in occupation of the land for
come to the Beis Din after.
Correct.
Say that this man,
correct.
Mine.
Correct. That's it. Right. Exactly. Okay. All right. So let's quickly review. And we'll continue tomorrow. So what do we have right now in the Gemara? We have three basic approaches to conflict resolution: Kol Dalam Gavar, Shuda D'Dainei, and Yachloku. And over the course of today's very short daf, but really, it's basic. The three different methods of conflict resolution are going to be based on a number of factors. Evidence that's given, indeterminate status versus determinate status, inherent conflict versus conflict based on the tainas that were given. So based on those factors, so it will be then decided whether based in either Kol Dalam Gavar, recuses themselves and let them work it out, Shuda D'Dainei will make a discretional decision of who belongs to, or Yachloku, or divide it. And then the rest of today's daf, we went back to the Mishnah and just made one singular point, which is that in a scenario where you know that someone else is going to be occupying your land for a lengthy period of time, it becomes your responsibility to go to Beis Din within the first 3 years, logic, form a challenge, so that the person who is occupying your property will not, at a later point in time, not make claim that, hey, I've been here for 3 years, for more than 3 years.